This is Audible.
Penguin Audio presents Furies of Calderon by Jim Butcher, read by Kate Redding. Prologue. The course of history is determined not by battles, by sieges or usurpations, but by the actions of the individual. The strongest city, the largest army, is, at its most basic level, a collection of individuals. Their decisions, their passions, their foolishness, and their dreams shape the years to come. If there is any lesson to be learned from history, it is that all too often the fate of armies, of cities, of entire realms, rests upon the actions of one person. In that dire moment of uncertainty, that person's decision, good or bad, right or wrong, big or small, can unwittingly change the world. But history can be quite the slattern. One never knows who that person is, where he might be, or what decision he might make. It is almost enough to make me believe in destiny. From the writings of Gaius Primus, First Lord of Alera.
"Please, Tavi,"
wheedled the girl in the pre-dawn darkness outside the Steadholt's kitchen.
"Just this one little favour."
"I don't know," said the boy. "There's so much work today."
She leaned in closer to him, and the boy felt her slender body mould against his, soft and flower-scented and delightful. She pressed her mouth to his cheek in a slow kiss and whispered in his ear,
"I'd be very grateful."
"Well," the boy said, "I'm not sure if,
She kissed his cheek again and whispered,
"Please."
His heart pounded more quickly and his knees felt weak.
"All right, I'll do it."
Chapter 1. Amara rode atop the swaying back of the towering old Gargant bull, going over the plan in her head. The morning sun shone down on her, taking the chill out of the misty air and warming the dark wool of her skirts. Behind her, the axles of the cart squeaked and groaned beneath their loads. The slave collar she wore had begun to chafe her skin, and she made an irritated mental note to wear one for a few days in order to grow used to it before the next mission. Assuming she survived this one, of course. A tremor of nervous fear ran down her spine and made her shoulders tighten. Amara took a deep breath and blew it out again, closing her eyes for a moment and blocking out every thought except for the sensations around her. Sunlight on her face, swaying of the pungent Gargant's long strides, creaking of the cart's axles.
"Nervous?" asked the man walking beside the Gargant.
A goad dangled from his hand, but he hadn't lifted it in the entire trip. He managed the beast with the lead straps alone, though his head barely came to the old bull's brown-furred thigh. He wore the plain clothes of a peddler, brown leggings, sturdy sandals, with a padded jacket over his shirt, dark green on homespun. A long cape, tattered green without embroidery, had been cast over one shoulder as the sun rose higher. "No," Amara lied. She opened her eyes again, staring ahead. Fidelius chuckled.
"Liar. It's not a brainless plan. It might work."
Amara shot her teacher a wary glance. "But you have a suggestion?"
"In your graduation exercise?" Fidelius asked. "Crows, no. I wouldn't dream of it, Academ. It would cheapen your performance."
Amara licked her lips.
"But you think that there's something I should know?"
Fidelius gave her a perfectly guileless look.
"I did have a few questions."
questions, Amara said. We're going to be there in a few moments.
I can ask them when we arrive, if you prefer.
If you weren't my Patroceras, I would find you an impossible man, Amara sighed.
That's sweet of you to say, Fidelius replied. You've come a long way since your first term at the Academy. You were so shocked when you found out that the cursors did more than deliver missives.
You love telling that story, even though you know I hate it.
No, Fidelius said with a grin. I love telling that story because I know you hate it.
She looked down at him archly. This is why the Cursor Legate keeps sending you away on missions, I think.
It's a part of my charm, Fidelius agreed. Now then, my first concern...
Question, Amara corrected.
Question, he allowed. Is with our cover story.
What question? Armies need iron. You're an ore smuggler and I'm your slave. You heard there was a market out this way and you came to see what money could be made.
Ah, said Fidelius. And what do I tell them when they ask where I got the ore? It isn't just found by the roadside, you know.
You're a cursor, Calidus. You're creative. I'm sure you'll think of something.
Fidelius chuckled. You've learned delegating skills, at least. So, we approach this renegade legion with our precious ore.
He nodded back toward the squeaking cart.
What's to stop them from simply taking it?
You're the harbinger of a smuggling network representing several interests in the business. Your trip is being watched, and if the results are good, others might be willing to bring supplies as well.
That's what I don't understand, Fidelius said, his expression innocent. If this is indeed a renegade legion, as rumors say, under the command of one of the High Lords in preparation for overthrowing the crown, aren't they going to object to any word about them getting out? Good, bad, or indifferent?
Yes, Amara said. She glanced down at him. Which works in our favor. You see, if you don't return from this little jaunt, word is going to spread all around Alera about this encampment.
Inevitable, since word would get out anyway. One can hardly keep an entire legion secret for long.
It's our best shot, Amara said. Can you think of anything better?
We sneak in close, fury-craft ourselves into the camp, obtain evidence, and then run like the crows were after us.
Oh, Amara said. I considered it. I decided it was too brainless and predictable.
It has the advantage of simplicity, Fidelius pointed out. We recover the information, give solid evidence to the Crown, and let the First Lord launch a more comprehensive anti-sedition campaign.
Yes, that's simpler. But once whoever is running this camp knows that they have been observed by the cursors, they will simply disperse and move their operations elsewhere. The Crown will simply spend money and effort and lives to pin them down again, and even then whoever is putting out the money to field their own army might simply get away. Fidelius glanced up at her and let out a low whistle.
So you want to get in and out undetected, get word to the Crown, and then what?
Lead a few cohorts of Knights Aeris back down here and crush them where they lie, Amara said. Take prisoners, have them testify against their backers, and wrap it all up right here.
Ambitious, he commented. Very ambitious. Very dangerous, too. If they catch on to us, they'll kill us. And it's reasonable to expect that they'll have knights as well, and that they'll be on the lookout for a cursor or two.
That's why we don't get caught, Amara said. We play the poor, greedy smuggler and his slave, haggle for all the money we can get from them, and leave.
And keep the money.
Fidelius frowned.
On general principle, I like any mission that involves a profit. But Amara, there's a lot that could go wrong with this one.
We are the First Lord's messengers, are we not? His eyes and ears?
Don't quote the Codex at me, Fidelius snapped, annoyed. I was a cursor before your mother and father had called their first furies. Don't think that because the First Lord has taken a shine to you that you know better than I do.
You don't think it's worth the risk?
I think there's a lot you don't know,
Fidelius said, and he looked very old for some reason. Uncertain.
Let me handle this, Amara. I'll go inside. You stay here and I'll pick you up on the way out. There's no reason to risk both of us.
No, she said. In the first place, this is my mission to run. In the second, you will need your full attention to play your role. I'll be able to make observations, especially from up here.
She slapped the Gargant's broad back, and the bull snorted up a small whirlwind of trail dust in response.
I'll also be able to watch our backs. If I get the impression that they're onto us, we can get out of there.
Fidelius muttered,
I thought we'd just use this guise to pose as travellers. Get close and slip into the camp after dark.
When no one else is coming in and when we're certain to arouse suspicion if we're seen?
He blew out a breath.
All right, he said, all right. We'll do it your way. But you're gambling yourself with the crows.
Amara's stomach fluttered again and she pressed a hand to it, trying to will the fear away. It didn't leave.
No, she said. I'm gambling both of us. Though the Gargant's plodding steps seemed slow, each covered many strides of a man. The great beast's thick-clawed feet ate the miles, though it stripped the bushes and trees of leaves along the way, adding to the layers of blubbery fat beneath its hide. If allowed, the humpbacked beast would wander into the richest forage and graze, but Fidelius handled it with a sure and calm hand, keeping the beast moving along the road while he marched at the quickstep beside it. A mile more, by Amara's estimation, and they had come within picket distance of the insurgent legion's camp. She tried to remind herself of her role, that of a bored slave, sleepy and tired from days of travel, but it was all she could do to keep the mounting tension from rising in her shoulders and back. What if the legion turned out to be nothing more than rumor, and her intelligence-gathering mission, so carefully outlined and planned, turned out to be a costly waste of time? Would the First Lord think less of her? Would the other cursers? It would be a paltry introduction into the ranks indeed if she stepped forth from the academy and straight into a monumental blunder. Her anxiety grew, like bands of iron stretching across her shoulders and back, and her head started to pound from the tension and the glare of the sun. Had they made a wrong turn? The old trail they followed seemed too well worn to be an abandoned lumber track, but she could be wrong. Wouldn't they be seeing the smoke of a legion's fires? Wouldn't they hear something by now, if they were as close as she suspected? Amara was on the verge of leaning down to call to Fidelius to ask his advice, when a man in dark tunic and leggings and a gleaming breastplate and helmet melted into view beneath the shadows of a tree on the road no more than 10 strides in front of them. He appeared without a warning of any kind, without a flicker of movement. Fury crafting involved, then, and a fairly skilled woodworking at that. He was a giant of a man, nearly 7 feet tall, and he bore a heavy blade at his side. He lifted one gloved hand and said, his tone bored, distant, "Halt!" Fidelius clucked to the Gargant bull, slowing the beast to a stop after several steps. The wagon creaked and groaned, settling onto its wheels beneath the weight of the oar.
"Good morning to you, master," Fidelius called, his voice oozing nervous, obsequious good cheer.
The senior cursor doffed his hat and clutched it in his slightly trembling hands.
"And how are you doing on this fine autumn morn?"
"You're on the wrong trail," said the dark giant.
His tone was dull, almost sleepy, but he laid a hand on the hilt of his weapon.
"This land is not friendly to travellers. Turn around."
"Yes, master, of course we will, master," Fidelius simpered. "I am but a humble peddler transporting his cargo in the vain hope of finding a ready market. I have no desire for trouble, good master, only for the chance to attempt to recoup my losses on this most excellent but lamentably ill-timed bounty of—"
Fidelius rolled his eyes skyward and dragged one foot through the dust of the trail.
iron. He shot the giant a sly smile. But as you wish, good master, I'll be on my way.
The dark man stepped forward and said, Hold, merchant. Fidelius glanced back at him.
Master, he asked, can I perhaps interest you in a purchase?
The dark man shrugged. He stopped a few feet from Fidelius and asked,
How much ore?
Nearly a ton, good master. As you can see, my poor gargant is all but done in.
The man grunted, eyeing the beast, and swept his gaze up it to Amara.
Who is this?
My slave, good master, Fidelius said.
His voice took on a cringing, wheedling tone.
She's for sale, if you like the look of her, master. A hard worker, skilled at weaving and cooking, and more than capable of giving a man an unforgettable night's pleasure. At 2 lions, she's surely a bargain.
The man snorted.
Your hard worker rides while you walk, merchant. It would have been smarter for you to travel alone.
He sniffed.
And she's as skinny as a boy. Take your beast and follow me.
You wish to buy, master?
The soldier gave him a look and said,
I didn't ask you, merchant. Follow me.
Fidelius stared at the soldier and then swallowed an almost audible gulp.
Aye, master. We'll be only a pace or 3 behind you. Come on, old boy.
He picked up the gargant's lead straps in shaking fingers and stirred the great beast into motion again. The soldier grunted and turned to start walking back down the road. He let out a sharp whistle, and a dozen men armed with bows appeared from the shadows and brush on the sides of the trail, just as he had a moment before.
Keep the men here until I return,
the man said.
Stop anyone from coming past.
Yes, sir.
One of the men said. Amara focused on that one. The men all wore the same outfits, black tunics and breeches with surcoats of dark green and dark brown. The speaker, in addition, wore a black sash around his waist, as the first soldier had. Amara checked around, but none of the other men wore a sash, only those two. She made a mental note of it. Knights? Possibly. One of them had to have been a strong woodcrafter, to have hidden so many men so thoroughly. Crows, she thought. What if this rebel legion turns out to have a full contingent of knights to go with it? With that many men, that many powerful fury crafters, they could be a threat to any city in Alera. And as a corollary, it would mean that the legion had powerful backing. Any fury crafter strong enough to be a knight could command virtually what price he wished for his services. They could not be casually bought by any disgruntled merchant set to convince his lord or high lord to lower taxes. Only the nobility could afford the cost of hiring a few knights, let alone a contingent of them. Amara shivered. If one of the high lords was preparing to turn against the first lord, then there were dark days ahead indeed. She looked down at Fidelius and he glanced up at her, his face troubled. She thought she could see the reflection of her own thoughts and fears there in his eyes. She wanted to talk to Fidelius, to ask him for his thoughts on the matter, but she couldn't break her role now. Amara ground her teeth and dug her fingers into the pad of the gargant's riding saddle and tried to calm herself again, while the soldier led them to the camp. Amara kept her eyes open as the gargant's plodding steps brought them around a bend in the trail and over a small hill into the valley beyond and behind it. There the camp spread out before them. Great furies, she thought. It looks like a city. Her mind took down details as she stared. The camp had been constructed along standard legion lines, a stake wall and ditch fortification built in a huge square surrounding the soldiers' encampment and stores. Tents of white fabric had been erected within, row after row of them, too many for easy counting, laid out in neat, precise rows. 2 gates opposite one another led into the camp. The tents and lean-tos of the camp's followers spread out around it in ragged disarray, like flies buzzing around a sleeping beast. People were everywhere. On a practice field beside the camp, entire cohorts of men were drilling in formation combat and maneuvers, ordered about by bawling centurions, or men in black sashes mounted on horseback. Elsewhere, archers riddled distant targets with their arrows, while fury masters drilled other recruits in the application of their basic war craftings. Women moved among the camp as well, washing clothes at a stream that passed by, mending uniforms, tending fires, or simply enjoying the morning sunlight. Amara saw a couple of women wearing sashes of black on horseback riding toward the practice field. Dogs wandered about the camp and set up a tinny racket of barking upon scenting the Gargant as it came over the hill. To one side of the camp, not far from the stream, men and women had established what looked like a small market, vendors hawking wares from makeshift stalls and spreading them upon blankets on the ground.
"You're here between breakfast and lunch," said the soldier, "or I'd offer you some food."
"Perhaps we'll take lunch with you, master," Fidelius said.
"Perhaps."
The soldier stopped and looked up at Amara, studying her with quiet, hard eyes.
"Get her down. I'll send out a groom or two to care for your beast."
"No," insisted Fidelius. "I'll be keeping my goods with me," the soldier grunted.
"There's horses at the camp, and they'll go mad if they smell this thing. It stays here."
"Then I stay here," insisted Fidelius.
"No."
"The slave, then," he said. "She can stay here with the beast and keep him quiet. He'd spook if strange hands cared for him."
The soldier squinted at him, hard and suspicious.
"What are you up to, old man?"
"Up to? I'm protecting my interests, master, as any merchant would."
"You are in our camp. Your interests are no longer an issue, are they?"
The soldier put no particular emphasis on his words, but he laid one hand on the hilt of his sword. Fidelius drew himself up, voice shocked and outraged.
"You wouldn't dare."
The soldier smiled. His smile was hard. Fidelius licked his lips, then shot a glance up at Amara. She thought she saw something in it, some kind of warning, but he only said,
"Girl, get down."
Amara slid down off of the back of the beast, using the leather straps to help lower herself down its flanks. Fidelius clucked to it and jerked down on its straps, and the Gargant settled lazily to earth with a contented rumble that shook the ground nearby. It leaned its great head over, tore up a mouthful of grass, and began chewing on it, huge eyes half closed.
"Follow me," the soldier said. "You too, slave. If either of you gets more than 3 strides away from me, I'll kill you both. Do you understand?"
"I understand," said Fidelius.
"I understand, master," echoed Amara, keeping her eyes lowered.
They followed the soldier then and crossed the stream at a shallow ford. The water was cold and flowed quickly over Amara's ankles. She shivered, goose flesh racing up and down her legs and arms, but kept pace with Fidelius and the soldier. Her mentor dropped back beside her and murmured very low,
"Did you see how many tents?"
She jerked her head in a nod. "Close."
"Well kept and neat, too. This isn't a gang of malcontent steadholders. Professional military."
Amara nodded and whispered, "Serious money behind them. Is it enough for the First Lord to bring it to the Council?"
"An accusation without anyone to accuse?"
Fidelius grimaced and shook his head.
"No. We have to have something that incriminates someone behind it. Doesn't have to be ironclad, but we need something tangible."
"Do you recognize our escort?" Fidelius shot her a look.
"Why? Do you?"
Amara shook her head. "I'm not sure. Something about him seems familiar." The other nodded.
"They call him the Sword."
Amara felt her eyes widen. "Aldric ex Gladius? Are you sure?"
"I've seen him in the capital in the past. I saw his duel with Araris Valerian.
Amara glanced up at the man ahead of them, careful to keep her voice down. He's supposed to be the greatest swordsman alive.
Yes, said Fidelius. He is.
Then he cuffed her along the head and said, loud enough for Aldrich to hear,
Keep your lazy mouth shut. I'll feed you when I please and not a second before. Not another word.
They walked in silence then into the camp. Aldrich led them through the camp's gate and down the main path dividing the camp in half. He turned left and led them to what Amara knew would be, in an Alaran Legion's camp, the commander's tent. A large tent sat there, and two legionaries stood outside it, breastplates gleaming, armed with spears in their hands and swords at their belts. Aldrich nodded to one of them and went inside. He appeared a moment later and said to Fidelius,
You, merchant, come inside. The commander wants to speak to you.
Fidelius stepped forward, and Amara moved to follow him. Aldrich put a hand on Fidelius's chest and said,
Just you, not the slave.
Fidelius blinked.
You expect me to just leave her out here, good master? It could be dangerous.
He shot Amara a glance, which she did not miss. A warning.
To leave a pretty young girl in a camp full of soldiers?
Aldrich said,
You should have thought of that before you came here. They won't kill her. Get inside.
Fidelius looked back at her and licked his lips. Then he stepped forward into the tent. Aldrich looked at Amara for a moment, his eyes distant, cool. Then he stepped back inside. A moment later he came back to the opening of the tent, dragging a girl with him. She was petite, even emaciated, and her clothes hung off of her like a scarecrow's. The collar around her neck, even on its smallest sizing, hung loosely. Her brown hair looked dry, brittle as hay, and she had dust on her skirts, though her feet were clean enough. Aldrich shoved the girl out unceremoniously and said,
Business.
Then he tugged the flap of the tent closed and went back inside. The girl tumbled to the ground, along with a woven basket, and landed with a soft cry in a tangle of basket and skirts and frizzy hair. Amara knelt down beside the girl and asked, Are you all right?
Oh, fine, the girl snapped.
She rose shakily to her feet and kicked a puff of dust at the tent with her toe.
Bastard, she muttered. Here I am, trying to clean things up for him, and he throws me around like a sack of meal.
Her eyes sparkled with defiance, and she turned to Amara.
I'm Odiana.
Amara, she responded, feeling her mouth tug up at the corners. She glanced around her, licking her lips, and thought for a moment. She needed to see more of the camp. Try to find something she could take with her.
Odiana, is there any place to get a drink around here? We were traveling for hours, and I'm parched.
The girl tossed her frizzy hair over one shoulder and sniffed at the commander's tent.
What's your pleasure? There's some cheap beer, but it's mostly water. Optionally, we could get a drink of water. And if none of that suits you, I think there's some water.
I'll have the water, Amara said.
A dry wit, Odiana noted.
She hooked the handle of the basket over the crook of her arm and said,
This way.
Then she turned and walked with a kind of bristling, crackling energy through the camp toward the opposite gate. Amara caught up with her, eyes flicking around. A troop of soldiers came jogging by, boots striking the ground in rhythm, and the two girls had to skip back between two tents to let them pass.
Odiana sniffed. Soldiers. Crows take them all. I am sick to death of soldiers.
Have you been here long? Amara asked.
Since just after the new year, the other said. But there are rumors that we'll be leaving soon.
Amara's heart pounded.
Going where?
Odiana looked at her with an amused smile.
You've not been around soldiers much, have you? It doesn't matter where you go. This, she gestured broadly at the camp, never changes. It's the same if you're down by the ocean or up at the wall, and the men never change. The sky never changes. And the earth doesn't change enough to notice. This is it.
But still, you get to go to new places, see new things.
Only new stains on uniforms, said Odiana.
The soldiers passed and the girls stepped out onto the track again.
but I've heard further north and maybe east a ways.
Toward Aquitaine?
Odiana shrugged.
Is that what's that way?
She walked along and opened the basket as they neared the stream, rummaging around inside.
Here,
she said.
Hold these.
She thrust a pair of dirty plates into Amara's arms.
We can wash them while we're here. Crows, soldiers are so messy, but at least the legionaries keep their tents clean.
She fished out a bone and threw it toward a passing dog, then an apple core from which she took a judicious nibble before wrinkling up her nose and tossing it into the stream. Next came a piece of paper which she hardly glanced at before flicking it aside. Amara turned and stomped the paper flat with her foot before the wind could catch it. Then she bent over and picked it up.
What?
Asked Odiana.
What are you doing?
Amara picked up the paper.
Well, it hardly seems like a good idea to just toss it on the ground if you're trying to clean up.
If it isn't in the camp, no one will care,
Odiana said. She tilted her head to one side, watching as Amara unfolded the paper and studied the writing inside.
You can read?
The slave asked.
Some, said Amara, distracted.
She read the note, and her hands started shaking as she did. Legion Commander, 2nd Legion. You are hereby ordered to strike camp and make for the rendezvous point. You should arrive no later than the 10th full moon of the year in preparation for winter. Maintain drilling until you march and dispatch the men in the usual manner. There was more, but Amara skipped over it, barely skimming, to see what was at the bottom. Atticus Quentin, High Lord of Attica. Amara's breath caught in her throat, her heart racing. Her fears were true. Insurrection, rebellion, war.
What does it say?
Asked Odiana. She shoved another plate into Amara's hands and said,
Here, put these in the stream.
It says... Amara fumbled with the plates, moving to the water's edge and leaning down to drop them in.
I can't really read it.
She fumbled with the note, sliding it away into one of her shoes, mind racing with the implications.
You know, said Odiana, voice bright and cheerful, I think you're lying. You don't often run into literate slaves, who ask questions about troop movements, and who are also politically learned enough to realize the wider implications of one little note. That's the kind of thing you expect from, I don't know.
Her voice dropped, and she almost puffed.
One of the cursori.
Amara stiffened and turned just in time to catch Odiana's bare heel in the chin. Pain flashed through her, dull and hot. The wasted-seeming girl had far more strength than Amara would have credited to her, and the blow stunned Amara and sent her tumbling back into the stream. She stood up out of it, shaking water from her face and eyes and drawing in a breath to cry out to her furies, but water rushed down into her mouth and nose as she inhaled, and she began choking. Amara's heart raced with sudden panic, and she reached up to her face, only to find it coated to above the nose with a thin layer of water. She scraped at it with her fingers, but it didn't flow down, and she couldn't clear it away. She struggled and choked, but only more water rushed in, coating her like a layer of oil. She couldn't breathe. The world began to glaze over with darkness, and she grew dizzy. The letter. She had to get the letter out back to the First Lord. The proof he would need. She made it to the bank before the water filling her lungs made her collapse. She writhed, smothering on dry land, and found herself staring at Odiana's bare, clean feet. Amara looked up as the wasted slave girl stared down at her, a gentle smile on her face.
You needn't worry, love, the girl said,
and she began to change. Her sunken cheeks filled out. The gangling limbs gained rondeur, beauty. Hips and breasts began to curve in enticing lines, filling out the clothes she wore. Her hair grew a bit longer, lustrous, darker, and she shook it out with a little laugh before kneeling down next to Amara. Odiana reached out and stroked fingers through Amara's damp hair.
You needn't worry, she repeated. We aren't going to kill you. We need you.
Calmly, she removed a black sash from the basket and tied it around her waist.
But you, cursori, can be a slippery breed. We'll take no chances.
Just go to sleep, Amara. It will be so much easier. And then I can send all the water back and let you breathe again. Amara struggled and fought for simple breath, but none came. Darkness gathered, points of light appearing before her eyes. She clutched at Odiana, but her fingers had gone nerveless and weak. The last thing she saw was the beautiful water crafter leaning down to place a gentle kiss upon her forehead.
Sleep,
she whispered.
Sleep.
And then Amara sank down into the blackness. Chapter 2 Amara woke, buried to her armpits in the earth. Loose dirt had been piled over her arms and into her hair. Her face felt thick, heavy, and after a moment she realized that her entire head had been liberally smeared with mud. She struggled to gather her wits through a pounding headache, piecing together fragments of memories and perceptions until, with a dizzying rush of clarity, she remembered where she was and what had happened to her. Her heart started to thud hard in her chest, and fear made her buried limbs feel cold. She opened her eyes, and bits of dirt fell into them so that she had to blink quickly. Tears formed to wash the dirt out. After a few moments, she was able to see. She was in a tent. The commander's tent in the camp, she guessed. Light poured into it through a gap in the flap that served as a door, leaving the tent's interior described in terms of dimness, shadow, and dark.
"You awake yet?" croaked a voice from behind her.
She turned her head, trying to look. She could barely see Fidelius out of the corner of her eye, but he was there, hanging in a cage of iron bars by straps around his shoulders and outstretched arms, leaving his feet dangling a good 10 inches off of the floor. He had a swelling bruise on his face, and his lip had been split and was crusted with dry blood.
"Are you all right?"
Amara whispered.
"Fine. Apart from being beaten, captured, and scheduled for torture and interrogation, you're the one who should be worried."
Amara swallowed.
"Why me?"
"I think this can safely be considered a failing mark in your graduation exercise."
Amara felt her mouth curve into a smile, despite the circumstances.
"We have to escape."
Fidelius tried to smile. The effort split his lips some more, and fresh blood welled.
"Extra credit. But I'm afraid you won't get the chance to collect on it. These people know what they're doing."
Amara tried to move, but she couldn't struggle up out of the earth. She barely succeeded in freeing her arms enough to move them, and even so they were thickly encrusted with dirt.
"Cirrus,"
she whispered, sending her thoughts out toward her fury.
"Cirrus, come pull me out."
Nothing happened. She tried again, and again. Her wind fury never responded. "The dirt," she said finally, and closed her eyes. "Earth to counter air. Cirrus can't hear me."
"Yes," Fidelius confirmed. "Nor can Itan or Vama hear me."
He stretched his toes toward the ground but could not reach. Then he banged his foot against the iron bars of his cage.
"Then we'll have to think our way out."
Fidelius closed his eyes and let out a slow breath. Then he said gently,
"We've lost, Amara. Checkmate."
The words hit Amara like hammers. Cold, hard, simple. She swallowed and felt more tears rising, but blinked them away with a flash of anger. No, she was a curser. Even if she was to die, she'd not give the enemies of the crown the satisfaction of seeing her tears. She thought for a fleeting moment of her home, the small apartment back in the capital, of her family, not so far away, in Parsia by the sea. More tears threatened. She took up her memories one by one and shut them away into a dark, quiet place in her mind. She put everything in there. Her dreams, her hopes for the future, the friends she'd made at the academy. Then she shut them away and opened her eyes again, clear of tears.
"What do they want?"
she asked Fidelius. Her teacher shook his head.
"I'm not sure. This isn't a smart move for them.
Even with these precautions, if something went wrong, a cursor could slip away and be gone as long as he was still alive.
The flap of the tent flew open and Odiana walked through it, smiling, her skirts swirling in the drifting dust the daylight revealed.
"Well then," she said, "we'll just have to remedy that."
Aldrich came in behind her, his huge form blocking out the light completely for a moment, and a pair of legionaries followed him. Aldrich pointed at the cage, and the two went to it, slipped the hafts of their spears through rings at its base, and lifted it between them, carrying it outside. Fidelius shot Aldrich a hard look and then licked his lips, turning to Amara.
"Don't be proud, girl," he told her as the guards started carrying him out. "You haven't lost, as long as you're alive."
Then he was gone. "Where are you taking him?" Amara demanded. She swept her eyes from Odiana to Aldrich and tried not to let her voice shake.
Aldrich drew his sword and said, "The old man isn't necessary."
He went outside the tent. A moment later there was a sound not unlike a knife sinking into a melon. Amara heard Fidelius let out a slow, breathless cry, as though he had tried to hold it in, keep from giving it voice, and been unable to do so. Then there was a rustling thump, something heavy falling against the bars of the cage.
"Bury it," Aldrich said.
Then he came back into the tent again, sword in hand. The blade shone scarlet with blood. Amara could only stare at the blade, at her teacher's blood. Something about it would not register on her mind. It simply would not accept the fact of Fidelius's death. The plan should have protected them. It should have gotten them close and away safely again. This wasn't how it was supposed to happen. It had never happened like that at the academy. She tried to stop the tears from coming, to push Fidelius's face into the dark place in her mind with all the other things she cared about. They only flooded over her again, bursting free, and as they did, the tears came with them. Amara did not feel clever anymore, or dangerous, or well-trained. She felt cold and dirty and tired, and very, very alone. Odiana let out a soft sound of distress and came to Amara's side. She knelt down with a white kerchief in her hand and reached out to dab at Amara's tears. Her fingers were gentle, soft.
"You're making clean spots, love,"
the woman said, her voice gentle. Then she smiled as, with her other hand, she crushed fresh earth against Amara's eyes. Amara let out a cry and thrust out a hand to defend herself, but she wasn't able to stop the water witch. She swept at her burning eyes with her dirt-crusted hands, but it did her little good. Her fear and sorrow turned itself into furious anger and she started screaming. She screamed every imprecation she could at them, incoherent, and she sobbed into the earth, making muddy tears that burned her eyes. She thrashed her arms and struggled, useless against the grip of the ground she was buried in. And in answer there was only silence. Amara's anger faded, taking with it whatever strength she had left. She shook with sobs that she tried to hold in, that she tried to keep hidden from them. She couldn't. Shame made her face burn, and she knew that she was trembling from cold and from terror. She started blinking her eyes again, slowly gaining back her vision, and as she did, she saw Odiana standing over her, just out of arm's reach, smiling, her dark eyes glittering. She took a step, and with one dainty bare foot she kicked more dust into Amara's eyes. Amara twisted and turned her head away, avoiding it, and shot the woman a hard glare. Odiana hissed and drew her foot back to kick again, but Aldrich's voice rumbled across the tent first.
"Love, that's enough."
The watercrafter flashed Amara a venomous look and retreated from her to the back of Aldrich's stool, where she rested her hands on his shoulders in a slow caress, eyes on Amara the entire while. The warrior sat with his sword across his lap. He ran a cloth along its length and then tossed the rag onto the earth. It was stained with blood.
"I'll make this simple," Aldrich said.
I'm going to ask you questions. Answer them truthfully and I'll let you live. Lie to me or refuse to answer and you'll wind up like the old man.
He looked up, his expression entirely without emotion, and focused on Amara.
Do you understand?
Amara swallowed. She nodded her head. Once.
Good. You've been in the palace recently. The First Lord was so impressed with the way you handled yourself during the fires last winter, he asked you to visit him. You were taken to his personal chambers and spoke with him. Is that true?
She nodded again.
How many guards are stationed in his inner chambers?
Amara stared at the man, her eyes widening.
What?
Aldric looked up at her. He stared for a long and silent moment.
How many guards are stationed in the First Lord's inner chambers?
Amara let out a shaking breath.
I can't tell you that. You know I can't.
Odiana's fingers tightened on Aldric's shoulders.
She's lying, love. She just doesn't want to tell you.
Amara licked her lips and then spat mud and dirt onto the floor. There was only one reason to be asking questions about the inner defenses of the palace. Someone wanted to take direct action against the First Lord. Someone wanted Gaius dead. She swallowed and bowed her head. She had to stall them somehow. Stall for time. For the opportunity to find a way to escape. Or failing that, to kill herself before she could reveal the information. She quailed at that thought. Could she do that? Was she strong enough? Before, she would always have thought she was. Before she had been taken, captured, imprisoned. Before she had listened to Fidelius die.
Don't be proud, girl.
Fidelius's last words to her came back, and she felt her resolve weaken further. Had he been telling her to cooperate with them? Did he think the First Lord was already doomed? And, she thought, should she? Should she go along with them? Offer to throw in? Should she cast aside what she had been taught, what she believed, for the sake of preserving her life? She couldn't attempt a ploy, not with Odiana there. The Water Witch would be able to sense whether or not she was sincere, damn her. Everything was lost. She had led Fidelius to his death, gambled his life and lost it. She had lost her own life as well. She might be able to redeem one of them, if she cast her lot with her captors. Another surge of anger flooded through her. How could she even be thinking such a thing? How could he have died? Why hadn't he seen it coming, warned her? Amara lifted her head abruptly and blinked her eyes several times. Her anger evaporated. Why hadn't Fidelius warned her indeed? The trap had been too well laid. They had been taken too cleanly, which meant that Aldric and Odiana had known that they were coming, and by logical extension. She focused her eyes on the pair of them and swallowed, lifting her chin a bit. I won't tell you, she said, and kept her voice calm. I'll not tell you another thing.
You'll die, said Aldric, rising.
I'll die, Amara agreed. You and your water witch can go to the crows. She took a breath and then raised her voice, honed it to a dagger's edge. And so can you, Fidelius. She had a moment to take satisfaction in the flicker of surprise in Aldric's eyes, the simple gasp that came from Odiana. Then she turned her eyes to the door and narrowed them, keeping her face set in a cold, hard mask. Fidelius appeared in the doorway, his clothes still rumpled. He had washed the bruise off the side of his face and was holding a clean white cloth to his bleeding lip.
I told you she'd see through it, he murmured.
Do I get graded on it, Patris Serus? Amara asked.
A+.
Fidelius stared at her and his mouth twisted into a grimace.
You will tell us what you know about the palace, Amara. It might get ugly before it's over, but you will. This is checkmate. You don't have to make it hard on yourself.
traitor, Amara said, dropping the word lightly. Fidelius flinched. His grimace darkened to a scowl. Odiana looked back and forth at the sudden silence, and then offered in a helpful tone,
"Shall I fetch the branding irons, then?"
Fidelius turned to them and said,
"I think we've been ham-handed enough for the moment."
He focused his eyes on Aldrich and said,
"Give me a few moments alone to talk to her. Maybe I can get her to see common sense."
Aldrich regarded Fidelius with a steady gaze and then shrugged.
"Very well," he said. "Love, would you?"
Odiana stepped around Aldrich's stool, eyes focused intently upon Fidelius.
"Do you intend to assist her in any way or to attempt to prevent us from discovering what we wish to know?"
Fidelius's mouth quirked up at the corner, and he focused on the Water Witch.
"Yes, I do. No, I don't. The sky is green. I am 17 years old. My real name is Gundred."
The woman's eyes widened, and Fidelius tilted his head to one side.
"You can't tell if I'm lying, love. I'm not some child. I've been deceiving crafters stronger than you since before you were born."
His gaze flicked past Odiana to Aldrich.
"It's in my best interest to get her to talk. In for a sheep, in for a gargant."
The swordsman smiled, a sudden show of white teeth.
"Not going to offer me your word of honor?"
The curse's lip curled.
"Would it matter if I did?" "I'd have killed you had you tried," Aldrich said. "A quarter hour, no more."
He rose, taking Odiana gently by one arm, and led her out of the tent. The Water Witch shot a glare at both Fidelius and Amara, and then left. Fidelius waited until they were gone, then turned to Amara and simply looked at her, saying nothing.
"Why?" she asked him. "Petraceros, why would you do this to him?"
He stared at her, expression not changing.
"I have served as a curser for 40 years. I have no wife, no family, no home. I have given my life to protecting and defending the crown, carrying its messages, discovering its enemies' secrets."
He shook his head.
"And I have watched it fall. For the past 15 years, the House of Gaius has been dying. Everyone knows it. What I have done has only prolonged what is inevitable."
"He is a good First Lord. He is just, and as fair as anyone could want."
"This isn't about what's right, girl. It's about reality. And the reality is that Gaius's fairness and justice has made him a great many powerful enemies. The Southern High Lords chafe at the taxes he lays upon them to maintain the Shield Wall and the Shield Legion."
"They always have," Amara interjected. "It doesn't change that the taxes are necessary. The Shield Wall protects them as well. Should the Icemen come down from the north, they would perish with the rest of us."
"They do not see it that way," Fidelius said, "and they are willing to do something about it. The House of Gaius is weakened. He has no heir. He has named no successor. So they strike."
Amara spat.
"Attica. Who else?"
"You don't need to know."
Fidelius crouched down in front of her.
"Amara, think about this. Ever since the Princeps was killed, it has been in motion. The House of Gaius died along with Septimus. The royal line was never very fertile, and the death of his only child has been taken as a sign by many. His time is past."
"That doesn't make it right,"
Fidelius snarled.
"Get it out of your head, child."
He spat on the ground, face twisted in fury.
"The blood I've shed in the crown's service, the men I've killed, is that any more right? Are their deaths vindicated because I serve this First Lord or that one? I've killed. I've done worse in the name of protecting the crown. Gaius will fall. Nothing can stop that now."
And you have cast yourself in the role of... what, Fidelius? The slave that rushes in to poison the wounded buck? The crow that soars down to peck at the eyes of helpless men not yet dead?
He looked at her, eyes flat, and gave her a smile empty of mirth or joy or meaning.
It's easy to be righteous when you are young. I could continue to serve the crown, perhaps prolong the inevitable. But how many more would die? How many more would suffer? And it would change nothing but the timing. Children like you would come in my place and have to make the decisions I am making.
Amara let her voice resonate with contempt.
Thank you so much for protecting me.
Fidelius's eyes flashed.
Make this easy on yourself, Amara. Tell us what we want to know.
Go to the crows.
Fidelius said without anger,
I've broken men and women stronger than you. Don't think that because you're my student I won't do it to you.
He knelt down to look her in the eyes.
Amara, I'm the same man you've known. We've shared so much together. Please.
His hand reached for her grime-covered one. She didn't fight his grasp.
Think about this. You could throw in with us. We could help make Alera bright and peaceful again.
She returned his gaze, steady. Then she said very quietly,
I'm already doing that, Patroceras. I thought you were, too.
His eyes hardened like ice, brittle, distant, and he stood up. Amara lurched forward, clutching at his boot.
Fidelius, she said, pleading. Please! It isn't too late. We could escape now. Bring word back to the crown and end this threat. You don't have to turn away. Not from Gaius and...
She swallowed and blinked back tears.
And not from me.
There was a pained silence.
The die is cast, Fidelius said finally. I'm sorry you couldn't be shown reason.
He turned, jerking his leg from her grasp, and walked out of the tent. Amara stared after him for a moment, then looked down, to where she had palmed the knife Fidelius always kept in his boot, the one he didn't think she knew about. She shot a glance up to the tent, and as soon as the flap fell, she started attacking the dirt that pinned her. She heard voices talking outside, too quietly to be understood, and she dug furiously. Dirt flew. She broke it up with the knife and then frantically dug it away with her hands, shoving it away, making as little noise as she possibly could, but even so her gasps for breath grew louder bit by bit as she dug. Finally she was able to move, just a little, to shove enough loose earth forward to wriggle. She reached out an arm and dug the knife into the ground as hard as she could, and used it as a piton to pull herself forward, up. A sense of elation rushed through her as she strained and wriggled and finally started snaking her way free of the confining earth. Her ears sang with a rush of blood and excitement.
Aldric, snapped the water witch from outside the tent. The girl!
Amara stumbled to her feet and looked around wildly. She lurched across the tent to grasp the hilt of a sword lying across a table, a light gladius little longer than her own forearm, and spun... her body still clumsy from its imprisonment, just as a dark shape filled the entry flap to the tent. She lunged out at it, muscles snapping together to drive the point of the sword in a vicious stroke at the heart of the figure in the doorway, Aldric. Steel glittered. Her blade met another and was swept aside. She felt her point bite flesh, but not much or deeply. She knew she had missed. Amara threw herself to one side as Aldric's blade rose in a swift counter and was unable to escape a cut that flashed a sudden hot agony across her upper left arm. The girl rolled beneath the table and came up on the far side from Aldric. The big man came into the tent and stalked her, pausing across the table.
Nice lunge, he commented. You pinked me. No one's done that since Araris Valerian.
He smiled then. That wolfish show of teeth.
But you aren't Araris Valerian.
Amara never even saw Aldrich's blade move. There was a hissing hum, and then the table fell into two separate